sacred presence of one who said he would guide his teaching to be our guide. May we follow his glorious example and walk with unfaltering step this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment.
All goodness throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha, raja, paramita.
Let's go around and say names again. It's kind of a nice way to claim our presence here. So I'm Gyoshi.
Julie.
Adam.
Carl.
Matt.
Gangjo.
Emily.
Mark.
Edinburgh.
Sophie.
Rachel.
Christina.
Kevin.
Chris.
Zodio.
Lucas.
Jeffy.
David.
Katie.
Jims.
Donna.
Katie.
Natalie.
Scott.
How about you?
And anybody here for the first time today? I know you are. And
I'm
you.
The first time for Wednesday night.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody. Okay, for the benefit of the recording, today is October 3rd, 2018, and this is our fourth class in an 11-class series on the foundational teachings of Buddhism. And by the way, I believe we now have all of the classes, all the recordings of classes up till today on the website, or available on the website.
That's true.
Point out again, book list, if you know of any books that have been meaningful to you concerning the Buddhist foundational teachings, feel free to put it up on there. I did want to note one thing that I discovered since last week, that first book, Stillness Flowing, which is a exhaustive account of the Thai forest tradition and monastic training in that tradition, really beautiful book. I found out that it's available online as a PDF if anybody wants to get it that way. It's free whether you get the 4-pound book or the PDF, but you know, that's a simple way to get it if you're interested in taking a look. I'm going to turn it over to Julie to review what we've done so far.
Okay, we'll start with just a little review of what we covered in the first few classes. So in the first class, we covered the life of the Buddha. So even though the historical Buddha, he was born into ideal human circumstances, he still managed to experience suffering. At 29 years old, he left home to investigate the nature of suffering and try to find a solution. And he was successful. So in the second class, we covered the first noble truth, which can be translated as human existence is called by dukkha. Dukkha meaning suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And the second noble truth, that the cause of dukkha is craving, or craving meaning wanting our circumstances to be somewhat other than they are. Last week we covered the third noble truth, which is cessation of craving is the cure for dukkha. And the fourth noble truth, that this cessation of craving is accomplished by living in accordance to the Eightfold Noble Path, which we talked about. And then you guys had a suggested homework assignment regarding the Eightfold Path, and that was to get a feel for the mental discipline aspect of the Eightfold Path by practicing a body scan. Was anybody able to do that for a few times this week? Quite a few people? Oh, fantastic. And would anybody like to share a little bit from their experience?
I fell asleep. 20 minutes. You get two sessions of 20 minutes, and I fell asleep both times.
Yeah, it's probably very good sleep after the body scan. It's used sometimes for insomnia. That's how I originally learned it. So, was it early in the body scan
no.
You fell asleep?
About right about here.
That's been I actually was originally, the body scan was the first type of meditation I was exposed to. I actually was
came across it in junior high, and at the time I was having a lot of trouble. I've had kind of some lifelong insomnia, and so I did that pretty daily through junior high and high school for insomnia, and it was incredibly effective. I think that, you know, the goal is you do kind of want to stay awake through the whole thing, but it is very effective for falling asleep. It's very relaxing.
A little work on it.
Even the assignment brought up a question for me, because I'm familiar and used to different types of meditation like that, but Zazen is not really like those type of meditations from what I understand. So I'm wondering, with if you practice and follow Zen, where do these other meditations fit in other than Zazen?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something Gyoshi and I have been talking about. It's, you know, I might have to turn this one over to you. I'll give you a stab at it. So there are a lot of other types of practice that are sometimes they're in some traditions they may could be considered more like a preliminary practice to a practice that is more like Zazen, which is an objectless type of meditation. You're not focused on a particular object. You're just present and aware and observing whatever comes up. In some schools of Buddhism, this is considered a challenging place to start. So some of these other practices exist, like the body scan, like metta practice, or reflecting on a sutra, or awareness of posture, or awareness of breath. That they're kind of tools to help build the stability and presence necessary to do Zazen, to do more like just a just sitting practice. So they're kind of a method that some people find helpful getting there. And Gyoshi probably has something good to add to that there.
I would say, you know, here in our Shasta Abbey tradition, we were pretty easygoing about using whatever works to get into the mind of meditation. So we're taught shikantaza, just sitting. And I guess, you know, I got such an intense period of instruction around that I have trouble with guided meditations, even though we're doing them here. I get kind of resentful of them. Mm-hmm. Please don't interrupt my silence. But you know, even Kilgan said that he had long periods where he's counted his breaths, you know, because his mind was just too busy.
So sometimes it'd be appropriate to do it here to get yourself settled in.
And I think it's very common that we spend a fair portion of each meditation period just working through all the junk in our mind, with our mind going and some of these practices, like, you know, if you do a very quick body scan, it doesn't have to be a 20-minute body scan. It can basically just be feeling some part of your body, knowing it's there and grounding, or taking a couple of deep breaths. But very often, some non-Zen practice like that is a good way to come to where you are.
Okay, that helps. Okay.
The bottom line is you don't have to write a report.
Nobody's in my mind.
You know, and nobody's grading you on the depth of your samadhi. So one of the things I've always appreciated about this practice is it's my responsibility. You know, I just see what's going on and I do find that the doing what works, you just have to kind of figure that out.
I would also point out, you know, we have a number of teachers here, both monastic and lay. Sanzen is available pretty much every morning, very early in the morning. And is that true every morning?
Wednesday and Thursday morning.
Wednesday and Thursday, okay. And then always on Sunday, there's formal sanzens available. And then also you can, if you have something going on that, you need some help with, contact the center and we can set up an informal sun's in.
Any other comments on body scan practice?
My mind tends to go like everywhere, like future and past, and never like right now. And it has been like difficult for me, but it's getting easier and easier. Mm-hmm. And by doing body scanning, like I know my container, like this is all I got. But like I tend to forget that. And then I have tunnel vision, and it's like just looking front. And then coming from Japan, like I have problem with understanding the word grounded and centered. Like I really didn't get what that means. But like after I do body scanning, I feel very like peaceful. And then nothing crazy. Because I used to be crazy. So, but like very, very like on the ground, and I'm just like feeling myself, and I feel grounded. Yeah. I guess that's what that means. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I've had trouble with those terms too. That I needed an experience of it to actually make those terms make sense. And that's where I think there is a useful place for those, even like a guided audio meditation, because you have something when your mind is kind of spinning off, you have an audio that is helping you come back. And I think later on, like with experience, we can kind of get good at doing that internally, and we don't need to rely on kind of an audio or a guided meditation anymore, but I find it very helpful too.
And then once you provide it on the website, he was good. He was very like relaxing, and he knew what he was doing. So
he's my favorite. I listened to a ton, and I think he's my favorite so far.
I only could do 20 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say for Janice's benefit, there one of the 20-minute ones later on. There's a lady that tells you about 4 times not to, if you're falling asleep, listen to my voice. So you should probably do that one. But I found it very, you know, it was nice feeling like the tingling in your toes and your hands. And I also had, you know, right when you lie down, we always just take it for granted that there's pressure, and you know, I felt like there's both pressure up and from the body down, so it's kind of like floating. Mm-hmm. So there's some neat sensations that you can do with it. It's very nice, and it does ground you, whatever that means.
I find that doing a little bit of body practice before doing body scan helps me to really feel and inhabit some of the numb places in my body, and that can be as simple as just like a little stretch, or I do some fascial work like with my extremities where I'm less present sometimes.
I agree, kind of touching places that don't have a lot of sensation, moving places that don't have a lot of sensation. That's very helpful. Yeah, thank you.
I would point out, by the way, that so this was done flat on your back? Yeah. So reclining meditation is a meditation posture. And it can be a very opening meditation posture. So a couple things that people do in reclining meditation to stay awake. One is to, you're flat on your back, but you can put your knees up. And then, as they start walking, that tends to be enough to keep you awake. And then another one is, kind of as you mentioned, paying attention to sound is one way to, that tends to keep us awake, too. If you do it a lot, my experience is after about 3 or 4 days of doing a fair amount of reclining meditation, the sleepiness ceases to be a problem.
Anybody else? Last call? All
right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for trying that one.
Anything else that's come up for you around anything that we've discussed so far? Okay, well, we can move into things. We're going to talk, among other things, tonight about kind of the other end of groundedness, which is the radical groundlessness, is going to tie into our subjects today. So today we're today and next week we're going to be exploring the three marks of existence, also sometimes called the three Dharma seals or the three characteristics of existence. And these are usually considered to be dukkha, or you know, what we've already discussed, suffering or unsatisfactoriness, anicca, which is impermanence, and anatta, or no self. Now we've already talked about dukkha to some, to a fair extent in previous classes, so I don't think we'll spend much time on that tonight. Tonight, what we're going to concentrate is on is impermanence. Now, I would imagine a number of you have some familiarity already with the marks of existence. Yes. Okay, so maybe a little more than half. The concepts are really straightforward. I mean, impermanence, kind of, that says it. But actually getting it, understanding this, embodying it, is a very different matter. And that's what we're going to try to get to in these next two classes. Felt experience kind of takes a lifetime. I hope we will get some glimpses of it tonight. I wanted to say that Thich Nhat Hanh, who we've referred to several times in his book, Heart of the Buddha's Teaching, is on the syllabus. He often has kind of an interesting slant on some of these teachings. And one thing he pointed out about the three marks of existence is that he says that the Buddha, and he claims the source is the Samyutta Nikaya, actually taught it two different ways, the three marks of existence being dukkha, anicca, and anatta, and also anicca, anatta, and nirvana. And that the Buddha taught these different versions of the three marks depending on the audience, depending on the teaching that he felt was needed. And that makes some sense to me that dukkha is kind of, dukkha is a little bit different from the other two. Dukkha is a factor of how deluded we are, how tight we're clinging to things, and we know that we can change that. Impermanence and no self are fundamental. We're not going to change those. So where does that put nirvana? I think that's an interesting question. One could say that nirvana is every bit as fleeting as dukkha. Or one can also say that nirvana is always there. And both are true. The three marks are fundamental to Buddhism. I'd say they're often put together with the Four Noble Truths as the most basic of the most basic and the most fundamental of the Buddhist teachings. And between the Four Noble Truths and the three marks of existence, they're transformative. as long as we can get into them deeper than just book learning. I read somewhere that Vipassana meditation, which is one form of the Theravadin Buddhism, is defined by the inquiry into how the three marks of existence are playing out in our lives. You know, and they point towards pretty much a constant mindfulness around how the three marks of existence are there. They're playing out. But they're also central to all forms of Buddhism that I know of. They're certainly the major three branches. I think it's important to note that though impermanence and no self are taught as separate topics or separate teachings, they're not really separate realities. One implies the other. You can't really experience one without experiencing the other. There are a number of different Dharma-based techniques that work towards embodying impermanence and no self. And these would include some things that we'll get to in future classes, the chain of dependent origination, the five skandhas, and similar explanations of cause and effect. The precepts, the Buddhist precepts that we take here when we formally become Buddhists, they're often taught as kind of signposts that alert us to when we are creating a separate self, you know, when we're separating ourselves from everything else. And then the Eightfold Path. Right view, which is the first, you know, usually talked about as the first step of the Eightfold Path, that is usually understood as a felt experience of the Four Noble Truths and the Three Marks of Existence. So impermanence and not self. Can both be liberating and to some deeply frightening. I think of all the teachings we have, they're potentially the most frightening we have. It's good that they fall around. You know, in our series here, they're falling around Halloween. The fright comes from seeing these from our habitual paradigm of separate self. We're not scared if we're not in that paradigm that, you know, I'm me clenching myself, my personality, my identity, and so on. Then it's going to be scary to lose that. And I think we have a lot of defensive habits around trying to keep things static, keeping things from changing. So impermanence is kind of... can be kind of threatening from that standpoint. Over time, I think we also come to realize that they're liberating. But I do want to say that as we explore these together, and as you explore them on your own, if you're feeling very uncomfortable anxiety around them, or even approaching panic in some cases, not usual, but it can happen, I would suggest you pull back a bit. Don't just marine yourself through it, okay? And that would be a good time to come talk to a teacher. Okay, so we were talking about groundedness. And how many of you saw videos of the, you know, on the web of the earthquake in Indonesia? Mm-hmm. Do you see any of the photos of the liquefaction of the ground? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That can Yeah, that kind of calls forth a little bit of that attitude of impermanence and no self. You know, there's a sense in which the ground does fall away. Practice, as it's developed over the last 2,500 years, usually is orderly enough that you're prepared for that as that happens. Occasionally, that's not the case. So you need to monitor yourself as you go through this. I doubt that any of you will have problems with it. We tend to regulate ourselves, but it can be frightening. Should be frightening a little bit, I think. Okay, so launching into impermanence. The concept is that everything is impermanent. Mountains, waters, flowers, bodies, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, even consciousness. Kyogen says in Zen Roots, all things change, all life grows old, decays, being ever changing. The doctrine includes the total separation of all moments from one another, leading ultimately to the void of the scripture of great wisdom, in Dogen Zuji, being time. It's impossible to find anything that is permanent. So I think, you know, many of us encounter and think of impermanence on a relatively superficial level. You know, one thing I hear a lot of people say is, you know, my main teaching venue is in the state penitentiary. And, you know, very often I will hear some version of, well, this really sucks, but at least I know it's going to pass. And
that's the upside of impermanence.
Right. Another side is, hey, this is really great. It's going to pass. This life is good. It's going to pass. Or this life sucks. It's going to pass. So that's all true, but this goes much deeper than that. Kyogen's quote there about this total separation of all moments from one another kind of hints at the depth we can go to. That nothing lasts for more than this moment. And when we tune into the moment, we actually can be in the moment. There's a deep, deep release around that. Everything new is with the next moment. Everything is new with the next moment. And it's true whether or not we notice it. It doesn't deny that there's some continuity through time. And we're going to look pretty much like we look when we walk in here, when we walk out of here at the end of the night. I'm able to complete a sentence, usually. So there is some sense of continuity. But there's an aliveness and a flow. And if we look closely, and we're going to do a few guided meditations tonight that are pointed towards getting us to look closely at this, we can see this flux, this flow of time, and we can be part of it. And actually, as we align with it, our lives change. Can you sense that a little bit? That, you know, if we're fighting it, you know, if we're trying to hold a permanent self, there's an inherent problem there. And if we can release into the flow of time, that problem dissipates.
I used to get physically sick before I started practicing Buddhism, thinking about that. Like I'd have to stop because I'd start to get nauseated. And I notice now that I'm either neutral or a little bit curious. Maybe not happy about it exactly. I've still got enough of a grasp of, I kind of like being comfortable. But curious, like, what's that like? What's going to happen next?
Mm-hmm.
Or what could happen next?
Yeah. It can become delightful. Yeah.
Isn't it? Because when I heard you, actually, I can't repeat what you said because I can't remember exactly what you said, but it'll relieve or that kind of. Isn't the point not so much to get into like a, I don't know, Zen, like my interpretation is less than like, you know, you become the sort of perfect person or you become the sort of, in an ideal state. It's kind of like, because like, I've contemplated impermanence a lot. And at one point, I was always looking for something to transcend that or somehow to accept it, whatever that means. And then I just kind of came to the conclusion, it's like, well, sometimes it is terrifying. And then sometimes it isn't terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's kind of like why I like Zen, because I don't have to be some avatar or some, I have to become something or, but when you said that, like, well, you get relief somehow, I mean, it's kind of a momentary thing. It seems like, you know.
It's, you know, I don't want to try to describe it too much because I'll be describing my experience of it, and I think we all will have somewhat different experiences of it. When Julie and I were discussing this, you know, I don't know if it's our personalities are different enough that we kind of approach this very differently, you know, or our ages are different enough that, you know, I think, you know, if you do this practice for a long time and you grow old in it, we tend to get softer around that, and it becomes less terrifying and more the curiosity. Does that get at what you were saying? We're not looking for a perfection around it.
Yeah.
And the point isn't the relaxation. The point is, you know, the point, and really the point of the Buddha's teachings was liberation from suffering and liberation and probably a deeper sense too.
Yeah, like in Theravada, it seems like it's more like that kind of, just that, yeah, I don't know, maybe this is getting too personal or something, but just for me, that idea of becoming some kind of something I'm not, I don't really want to do that. I mean, thank you very much, sorry. But,
most of us are already something we're not.
I don't even want to evolve into anything like this.
I think what I'm hearing is that sense of pressure to be a certain way, that you have to achieve something and then hang on to it, which is really, in many ways, the opposite of what we're trying to do.
I think that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. I know when I think about, I always think, oh, time's slipping away and I'm such a loser and I should have. So, yeah, that's kind of go to that.
Yeah, so.
It's like, well, here you are, you're not here.
That recognition that, you know, basically we're all just doing our best, and we have these moments, and then we have these other moments. Right?
Anybody else? You know, there are a number of kind of new agey expressions around this. Being in tune with impermanence, be here now, be present, be mindful of what's happening in this moment. My experience is that it's very difficult to maintain presence in the moment if that's what you're trying to do. And for me, I'm finding actually struggling for a way to express this, loosening myself into this impermanence, loosening my the barriers that I put up against it, letting go of those, that actually gets me into a place where I can, for longer anyway, you know, stay present in the moment. Because with impermanence, that's all there is the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Quote from from that Theravada book, Stillness Flowing. The Buddha referred to four pairs of transient conditions inherent in the human realm that needed to be clearly understood. He taught that the eight worldly dharmas of gain and loss, status and obscurity, praise and blame, and pleasure and pain are inescapable features of human life. Even liberated beings experience these conditions. And here's how it's relevant. But knowing them for what they are, impermanent, unreliable events, they remain unfazed by them. Thich Nhat Hanh said, every time we look or listen, and I'd add, or touch or smell or taste or think, the object of our perception can reveal to us the nature of impermanence. We have to nourish our insight into impermanence all day long. So there's a Zen Buddhist who is basically saying, you know, what the Theravadins are saying, that mindfulness of impermanence and low self and suffering are critical to the path, to the practice. This is a passage from a book by Steve Hagen, piece in Katagiri's lineage, I believe. The book is called Buddhism is Not What You Think, which is getting at our conceptual thought about Buddhism is not Buddhism. He says, it's not that the universe is made up of innumerable objects in flux. There's only flux. Nothing is or can be riding along in the flux, like a cork in a stream. Nothing actually arises or passes away. There's only stream. I find that a really powerful statement. If any of you have, if any of you are able to go backpacking or find a stream where you are alone, meditating by the side of the stream is incredibly powerful.
Can you read that one more time, Christian?
It's not that the universe is made up of innumerable objects in flux. There's only flux. Nothing is or can be riding along in the flux, like a cork in a stream. Nothing actually arises or passes away. There's only stream. And that includes us. You know, that we're not objects flowing along in the stream. That we are stream. So if we allow ourselves congruence with impermanence, in other words, if we don't fight it, assume it away, make it a thought or a philosophy or a science, or resist it in any way, we then allow the absolute into our lives. It's a deep letting go, it's a profound surrender. Okay, so what I want to try to do, how are we doing on time here? Wow. this is a guided meditation I'd like to try with you. It's a fairly short one. It's, I adapted it from one that Tara Brach presents. So, you know, getting to a comfortable position. If you find it easier to do these with your eyes closed, feel free to close your eyes. I generally like to do that with guided meditations. And by comfortable position, I mean, you know, you don't have to look like a Zen Buddhist. Just be comfortable. So I invite you to come into stillness. And as you close your eyes, let yourself become aware of sitting still. But noticing that inside you, nothing is still. Be aware of the moving of sensation. Feeling your hands softening your hands. Feeling the aliveness there. And in your feet, tingling, vibrating. Can you open the attention and feel the whole body? Perhaps you can sense the movement of energy. Can you include sound and sense the changing dance of sound? Can you let this river of sound and sensation and feelings just flow through? Sense that the whole universe is animated, energetically, moving, dancing, tingling, vibrating, appearing, and disappearing. Notice what happens if you invite yourself to completely let go into that changing, flowing river of aliveness and just let everything happen. In that sense, in the foreground, the streams of energy, sensations, vibration, sound. And maybe you can sense a background, the light awareness that's shining through everything, the space that everything is happening in. Everything you see has its roots in the unseen world. Forms may change, but the essence remains the same. Every wondrous sight will vanish. Every sweet word will fade. Let it. There's no need to grieve. No need to fear. This indescribable essence is within you, always available. We'll close this meditation with a simple prayer. May we remember this living flow, this aliveness that courses through us. And may we rest in that vast, open-hearted presence. May we remember who we are and live from that loving presence.
Some days, but at that moment I felt floating without fear, so I experienced it.
I think I had a little glimpse of what it would be like to not fight that so much. I don't know that I fully experienced it, but I was like, oh, this could be okay. And then when it ended, I was like, again! And then that was funny because in person. Mm-hmm. So it was ironic, but in a good way.
Yeah, thanks. Anybody else?
Well, I've had a very, shall we say, stressful day with various things happening that have been unexpected and difficult. And so it's been a little difficult to let go of those, and so I just found myself floating back and forth in between, noticing that, but right now I'm here and everything's fine, and the thoughts would come up, and what about this and what about that, and it's like, okay, you know, it's, I'm worried or I'm whatever, and that's fine, so just kind of letting all of that flow through, and allowing the state to keep changing at moment to moment. Is there anything I need to do right now? No, I can just sit here, it's fine. It's kind of a relief, really. So,
was anybody able to get a, you know, did you learn anything new about impermanence? From that exercise.
Yeah. I don't know, there was more sensation of like physical being, like it's like this. And it was very flowy. And a bit of what you just said about things coming up, that past thoughts or future thoughts kind of came in and then went away very quickly. And the boundary of like, oh, I'm gonna take that thought on and hold on to it, it didn't attach in the same kind of way. And then the sound, bringing in the sound part of it, somehow allowed for that a little bit more, because it did bring me back to, in a way that wasn't like, oh, there's that thought again. It was more like, oh, there's a sound, okay, and then I'm back in this flow. Mm-hmm. And I haven't experienced that quite like that. That's really, I want to say it felt very special, but I don't know what it was.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else?
Yeah. When I sit, I often find, and this is happening now too, that there's a like three phases that happen in the flow of like a state of activity, whether it's my mind or I'm trying to land with an anchor of meditation, of focus. There's like a receptive phase that's open and has a little bit of activity, and then there's like a pause when there's not really anything happening at all. And that when I sit, rather than just with myself, sitting with the whole room all at once, that includes myself and what's happening in my interior, that flow of things, it has a different quality to it. And I